go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's live, the 29th day of November 2013. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And that's where you'll find access to the chat room, which will be filling up, I trust, shortly. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Free, easy. You'll also find the live stream there, the Listen Live button. Yes, indeed. And it's a handy way to listen, unless, of course, you want to listen on a mobile device. Then we recommend either TuneIn Radio or Stitcher Internet Radio for your listening pleasure. You can also find the PayPal button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Let's get this out of the way. We had a very inspiring program on Wednesday, which means that we are not nearly as desperately in the hole as we were going into Wednesday's program. Now, if we could find 35 folks with $10, we would have the month of November lit just under the wire. 35 at 10, 10 at 35. We're about $350 down. And thanks to everybody who responded so graciously on Wednesday, it was a huge help. Bills got paid. At least a couple of them did. There's more outstanding. So that's where we find ourselves this Friday. It is Friday, as I said, the 29th of November, 2013. Friday on the front porch. And we'll be opening the gate to the front porch and hopefully sitting down and jawing and cussing and discussing a little bit later on here. And plenty of things to jaw and cuss and discuss over. Wow. Now this is just apropos of nothing. But do you know what coal smoke smells like? It's sickening. Almost sweet. Somewhat overpowering. And apparently, I've got more than one or two neighbors who still burn the filth for heat. Yuck. And somehow or another, the wind must be blowing from them toward me because, yeah, and smell the stuff. Of course, if you can smell coal smoke, you know that you're being poisoned by coal smoke to one degree or another. But, yeah, very much so. Ugh, it's usually not that pronounced. It's odd for the wind to blow that way. I don't recall ever smelling it here in the studio before. Believe you me, if I had, I would. And also, believe you me, I'm the weirdo. We don't heat with coal. No, no, no. No, no, no. Oh, it's obnoxious. It's disgusting. It's nauseating. No kidding. And that's the kind of thing you can't spray anything at and make it better. Ugh. Thanks, Randy. Randy reporting loud and clear in PA. Hope you all, if you chose to or if you did not, I hope you didn't. Hope you all had a lovely Thanksgiving yesterday. Tough one for Packers fans. Eesh, that was a beatdown. We had a very nice, very quiet affair. I am recooking this evening and tomorrow because our eldest is coming over, and she has had a two-day sojourn in in-law hell. And all in the world she wants is her daddy's dressing. So Daddy is going to be making some more dressing this evening after the program is over. That'll be fun. It really will be. And just to see the smile on her face. Yeah. In a word, we stayed home yesterday. Ah, that's lovely. Night two of Thanksgiving. Night two of Hanukkah, too, isn't it, Texas Betsy? Good luck. Enjoy. Audio and video proliferated on the interweb tubes of scenes of... third night of Hanukkah. Okay, thank you. I get so lost. No, the audio and video has promulgated across the interweb tubes of what it was like. This is referred to as gnat sound in the business. You know, nothing says Thanksgiving like a cop screaming, "Get on the ground!" At what point does this monstrosity, this national shame, not become some sort of national security risk? It's not safe. It is not safe to go out there. There's too much potential for randomized violence, and yet there they are in their hordes, hoping to get a bargain. Jeebus, my God! I mean, it looks like, I don't know. It looks like a bread riot, only it's over Rachel Ray cookware. We spent the evening worrying about our son-in-law, hoping he'd be okay in the midst of all the chaos. He is. They're having their dinner this evening. By the way, no hazard pay, no OT, no nothing. As the gang in Bentonville, Arkansas, just sits back and chuckles watching the proles make violent fools of themselves. And they will laugh all the way to the bank. You know, it's stuff like this that really does put what Pope Frank said in real context. You know, it was a few days ago that Pope Frank said that trickle-down economics is a fraud, and basically, you never know who's listening to the program. You just don't. Hi, Frank. The reason I said, because he said what we've been saying for so very long, that capitalism is consumptive. It is self-consumptive. It is destructive. And in essence is contrary to the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. Any objections to that? I rather suspect that even some of the heretics like, me, will give Frank a big amen for that. But mercy sakes alive! What? Pope Frank's comments are driving the right wing right straight out in their trees. I remember when that old goober Stuart Varney used to be at CNN. I thought he was insufferable then. No, insufferable is what he became once he went to Radio Rwanda. Really, really. Radio Rwanda's unwatched business channel, I guess, is the better way to put it. But any way you slice it, these right wingers don't like anything bad being said about capitalism. You would almost think that capitalism is, in fact, their religion.
Pope Francis says free market capitalism is a form of dictatorship. He says it devours human beings and the environment. Here's my take. I disagree with His Holiness in two ways. First and foremost, capitalism, in my opinion, is a liberator. The free choice of millions of people is the essence of freedom.
Shut the up. Capitalism is a liberator. It liberates money out of people's pockets and into the pockets of the gang in places like Bentonville or maybe Stewart's pals on Wall Street. Free choice? Yeah, 167 cable channels and nothing on, and 29 different kinds of high fructose maltodextrin laden breakfast cereals. That's some choice, Bubba.
In my opinion, society benefits most when people are free to pursue their own self-interest. I know that sounds like a contradiction.
No, it sounds like meaningless psychobabbleous BS. Because people are not free to pursue their own self-interest. I, for instance, consider it to be in my self-interest not to consume the aforementioned high fructose corn syrup. Some people feel the same way about, fluoride. Try to stay away from it in this system. Just try. I dare you. I mean, I picked up it because it's that time of year. I picked up a jug of eggnog. Granted, mass-produced from one of the local dairy companies. Let's see, milk, water, sugar, high fructose corn syrup. Damn! Set it back on the shelf. Picked up another brand, milk, cream, eggs, high fructose. Damn! There was not a no high fructose corn syrup brand in there. So, no, I was not free to pursue my own self-interest because, you know, that stuff, you know, when it's exposed to cancer cells, the cancer cells go woohoo and start multiplying like Jethro Bodine with a few cups of coffee in him. I mean, ciphering, baby. Let's go back to Stuart Varney's contradiction in terms.
But it's not. When individuals are free, we collectively are better off in every way, financially and spiritually.
Please define freedom, Mr. Varney, you moron. Capital, do you see what he's done here? Pope Frank made a critique of capitalism, which Stuart Varney then says it means that he's criticizing freedom, Wolverines! Right?
Pope John Paul understood that.
Pope John Paul was damn near a fascist. I think we could probably take away the damn near.
He had experienced firsthand the horrors of a real dictatorship, and we in America are beginning to understand the problems that come when government sticks its fist into the marketplace.
Marketplace fisting? Really? He went there? This guy... No, really, somebody signs a check every couple of weeks for him to write this kind of crap. Marketplace fisting. Where's the 70s porn music? Marketplace fisting. Oh, I wouldn't want to be Mrs. Varney when he got home that night.
That's point one. Markets work well for everyone.
That's point one. I haven't offered any proof whatsoever, but markets work well for everyone, except the people at the lowest end of the production chain, in which case they are usually consumed and no one gives a good goddamn about what happens in the aftermath. Anybody want to talk about how the market's working for folks who happen to live near some tar sands or near some Bakken shale or some frack gas or some mountaintop removal? Because the market's not working so well in McDowell County, West Virginia, where the average male lifespan has dipped to that of a person from Haiti and is lower than that of a person from Guatemala. Is that what he means by the market works well for everybody?
Second, I personally do not want my spiritual life mixed up with my political life.
Unless it's somebody on your side doing it, right, Stewie?
Who is?
Because I don't remember seeing any commentary, any Jeremiads, any encomiums, any encyclicals coming from the desk of Stuart Varney when, some hack like Bro Fromix Santorum was out there babbling on about the little fetuses, which, by the way, this same Evangelii Gaudium contains some, you know, I mean, Pope Frank gets some stuff right, he's still getting some stuff wrong. It's got some real stupidity about women's rights in it, but we'll stick with the economic stuff. It's almost, I think we can say that we expect the church to be stupid about women, because it has never not been stupid about women. You go to church for the sake of your soul. Stuart Varney, you stupid piece of... You don't have a soul. You're a thing. You're a creature. A little money-grubbing bit of nastiness wallowing around on this dirt ball in the universe, hurtling at untold, ungodly speeds around the sun, moving through the cosmos, and just waiting to return you to the stuff from which you sprang, your soul.
I go to church to save my soul. It's got nothing to do with my vote. Pope Francis has...
Really? Voting has nothing to do with one's soul? I guess that's the default position you'd kind of have to take if you were on the side of, say, George W. Dim Leader Pinhead Bush, who at the stroke of a pen, ordered the slaughter of up to 1 million innocent Iraqi civilians, God knows how many Afghan innocents, and our own military personnel a few years back. I guess you'd have to take it. Yeah, my vote has nothing to do with my soul. Because, see, if your vote does have something to do with your soul, I don't think there's a church on this planet that can help you, Stewie. Because your hands aren't the only... No, the whole of you is covered in blood, you filthy warmonger.
...linked the two. He's offered direct criticism of a specific political system. He's...
No, capitalism, goddammit, is not a political system. It is an economic system. Although I'm beginning to think from the tenor of this that for Stuart Varney it's a religious system.
...characterized negatively that system. I think he wants to influence my politics. Now look, I think Pope Francis is a wonderful man. He lives simply, without extravagance. His life is an example to us all.
It's an example we don't care to emulate because, you know, I like having the undocumented workers who mow my lawn and swab my toilets, and I like having nice stuff, and I like being, you know, wealthy because Rupert Murdoch, you know, once you get in Rupert's good graces, he throws the money around pretty, dare I say it, liberally.
So, this Episcopalian is not critical of the man. I simply wish to keep politics out of the pulpit.
Yeah, okay. You want politics to stay out of the pulpit. Until you need the pulpit to... jumpstart the propaganda, right? That's about the size of it, isn't it? Hey, thanks very much. Hold on here. Oh, it's a tired old computer. No, we have gotten started. With the evening's fundraising. And thanks very much going out to Robert in Australia, who got us started with the... we now need only 34 folks at $10 apiece, and we will be out of November to the good. So thanks. Thanks much. Yeah, see, Texas Betsy saw right through it. Hey, Labor Man in the chat room. Howdy. She said, Bob, they tell the Christians they can't vote Democratic because of abortion and the gays. Yeah, there's that. Interestingly enough, that was next on the list. Really? Jim noting, like it or not, the Pope is the spiritual leader of 1 billion people, and his name is Francis, not Frank. Oh, lighten up, Jim. Jesus. He's Frank. He's doing it his way. That's what the reference is to. And he's not mine, so, you know, Jim, you're lucky I'm not calling him Pope Epaminondas Aloysius, because I can do that, too. But I actually have some respect for the old guy. At least when it comes, you know, where this economic stuff is coming from. Like I said, the insanity about women, I guess the church is going to stay insane about women until when, I don't know. Sergey noting via email, aside from the fact that the whole Black Friday thing is a shallow consumerist feeding frenzy, you're very correct that it's not safe, Bob. My sister tried to drag me along on her little shopping spree, even going so far as to offer me a couple of Jacksons to hold a place in line for her. And I flat out refused. I refuse to participate in this crap in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and my personal health and safety is not worth risking over any amount of money. Signed, Sergey Sis tried to drag me to Black Friday. I said, no, 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 Kyle. Thanks, Sergey. Randy pointing out, these free markets are actually rigged markets. Everyone in America is actually paying a hidden 15% tax because the hedge funds are front-selling the market and skimming 15% of the cream off the top. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. News Ninja Gene pointing out the contagion is spreading. BBC News, Black Friday flurry for UK retailers. A rush by some retailers to copy a U.S.-style Black Friday boosts sales but leads to a fight in one Asda shop. And an arrest at another as customers seek the best discounted deals. Might be worth remembering, as I think Sandra mentioned a few weeks back, this should be an anniversary of sorts to remember a man who gave his life in the service of capitalism at a Long Island Walmart back in 2008. Yeah. There were no criminal penalties. Everybody walked. And workers' comp sucks when it comes to death benefits, even in New York. But you know how Stewie Varney wants to keep the religion separate from the politics? I wonder how long it will be before we get a My View from Stewie Varney on this clown.
You must overcome two challenges. The first one is political correctness. Political correctness is killing us. It's killing us. I mean, I speak to pastors all the time. You know, the Lord, back in the beginning of this year, the Lord told me very, very clearly,
you got that? Never mind what the Lord told. This, by the way, is Raphael Cruz and his apparently portable reverb machine. I'll just turn mine up, too. He says the Lord told him very clearly back in the beginning of the year, and we'll find out in a minute what it was he got told. We can probably imagine. But the Lord told him very clearly. That means that the Lord didn't mumble. That means that the Lord speaks in a human voice to Raphael Cruz. And anybody else in America walks through the door saying that some invisible voice is speaking to them, we will make sure, to the extent that a craptastic capitalism-driven healthcare system can, that we get some medication for the individual to make the voices go away, unless he says it is the almighty creator of the universe that's doing the talking, and that, in fact, he's telling him to do Republican things. Got it? Yeah. I hate the reverb. I hate the pretense.
If there is one group of people that I hold responsible for what's happening in America, it's the pastors.
Amen.
Because the majority of the pastors have been hiding behind the pulpit. And God called me to one verse of Scripture, a verse of Scripture very dear to my heart, because it's a verse of Scripture that God used me to call me to the ministry. And it's Ezekiel 3:17 that says, Son of man, I call you as a watchman on the wall, basically to do two things. To hear from me, and to warn the people. And God told me, you wake up the pastors so they will warn the people. And the reason I know without a doubt that it was, that I heard from God, is that supernaturally, without my moving a finger, pastors' conference began materializing. Week after week after week after week, I'm doing pastors' conferences now all over the country. I have not organized one of it.
No, he hasn't organized one of it. he's got somebody out there doing it for him. Charming, huh? Tell me, and maybe we can talk about this during on the front porch, but tell me, what must it be like to constantly have what you perceive to be the voice of the almighty creator of the universe sort of running as a constant background hum in your mind? Will I have steak or will I have lobster? And the background voice says, neither shall ye have the steak nor... neither shall ye have the steak nor the lobster, but thou shalt partake of the mutton.
Damn! I don't like mutton.
Hey, I'm the guy who lives in your head. I said mutton. So... does Stuart Varney's keep your politics out of the pulpit and your pulpit out of the politics apply to this clown too? He's not done, you know.
It's God. And so, Tom, when you're saying about 2 Chronicles 7:14, yes, we need to be on our knees praying. But you know, God is going to call us to something more. God's going to call us to also put feet to our prayer and go out there and occupy the land and take this country back for righteousness.
Really? He's calling on... you heard the same thing I heard, right? This is the father of a sitting United States senator who has greased his own son's head with oil because he thinks he is due to be a king. No, really. And he is calling for a theocratic occupation of the United States. You got it? You little skirt. Because that scares the bejeebus out of me. Jan in the UK, by the way. Guess who owns Asda here in the UK? You'll only take one guess. Walmart. The gang in Bentonville are a virus that threatens the entire globe. I wonder if you could even pass laws to stop this stuff. Thanks, Kate. Kate jumped in to help out Robert in Australia, and that puts down to 32 folks at $10 a piece to get things wrapped up this month. And just had a note from Asa. He said, Bob, I'm going to kick $50 into the basket, and I'd like to challenge the Horn Nation to help dig out of this hole, this being the last day of the month and all. Thank you, Asa. Thank you very much. So that's on the table now. And Asa would like, for those of you who haven't or can't, didn't this month, would like a little kick in, a little help. But no, Frank's... pronouncements about the consumptive nature of capitalism. That's not sitting at all well with anybody. And you know, when I want to know about the real nature of the saving grace of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate Rabbi Yeshua, you know who I go to? You know who I go to for the real clarity that makes that grace just pop and come alive for me. Yeah. Yeah, I know. You do, too.
I mentioned last night, I was doing show prep last night, usual routine, and I ran across this, I don't actually know what it's called, the latest papal offering statement from Pope Francis. Now, up until this, I'm not Catholic. Up until...
No, Flush, you're not Catholic. You're not Christian. I don't think you're any religion. I think you probably eat babies. I mean, I don't think the atheist, even somebody who does not buy into any organized religions like me, doesn't want you on the team. If this was a schoolyard, you wouldn't get picked last in the team choosing. You'd be let him go play in traffic, okay, Miss Othmar? So okay, we understand. Plus, you're not a Christian.
This I have to tell you, I was admiring the man. I thought he was going a little overboard on the common man touch. And I thought there might have been a little bit of PR involved there. But nevertheless, I was willing to cut him some slack. I mean, if he wants to portray himself as still from the streets of where he came from and is not anything special, not aristocratic, if he wants to eschew the physical trappings of the Vatican. Okay, cool, fine.
And I'm sure Frank sleeps ever so much better at night knowing that he has received an okay, cool, fine from a guy who used to send his maid out with a cigar box full of money so she could bring it back with a cigar box full of street opiates. What? I got an okay, cool? From Rush Limbaugh? Hey, Rush, megaditos! I mean, I guess Rush and the Pope have a little bit in common. I mean, they're both... Well, no, I was going to say they're both single men, but no, Rush does have a wife that he keeps in a pit.
But... this that I came across last night, I mean, it totally befuddled me. If it weren't for capitalism, I don't know where the Catholic Church would be.
Huh?
Explain.
Now, as I mentioned before, I'm not Catholic.
Yeah, that's twice now. You got something you'd... Well, then again, he did take that Dominican vacation with an illegal bottle of Viagra in somebody else's name, and it was all guys on the trip, and the Dominican Republic is known for sex trade in little boys. Hmm? Rush? Rush, you want to tell us something?
Admire it profoundly. And I've been tempted a number of times.
Oh, we know you've been tempted. To some people, the devil comes in the guise of a blackjack dealer and you're sitting on 16. To others, it comes in the form of a little white pill that makes all the agony go away from having to sit behind a microphone for 3 hours a day, lying through your filthy teeth. The devil comes in many forms, doesn't he? Rush.
To delve deeper into it. But the Pope here has now gone beyond Catholicism here, and this...
Oh, okay, so we've got two I'm not a Catholics, but now America's truth detector, with half his brain tied behind his back and talent on loan from God, margin call, is going to explain how Pope Frank has...
run out past proper Catholic doctrine. Hell, get the popcorn. This ought to be fun.
This is pure political. And I want to share with you some of this stuff. Pope Francis attacked unfettered capitalism as a new tyranny. He beseeched global leaders to fight poverty and growing inequality in a document on Tuesday, setting out a platform for his papacy and calling for a renewal of the Catholic Church. In it, Pope Francis went further than previous comments, criticizing the global economic system.
By the way, in case you're wondering, this is the Rand Paul style of broadcasting Flimball is doing here, because he's not. That's not coming off the cuff. That is written material he's reading, and it is not something that Rush wrote.
Acting the idolatry of money. I got to be very careful. I have been numerous times to the Vatican. It wouldn't exist without tons of money. But regardless, what this is...
What are you chewing on, chicken salad back there, Rush? What are those noises? I've been to the Vatican many... My friends, I've been to the Vatican many times. It has yet to have any impact on me whatsoever. For I am a servant of the Old One. Do you have time for me to tell you about Cthulhu's plan for your life? Yeah. Wow, big doings. Thank you very, very much, Labor Man. Labor Man just answered the call from Asa and Kate and Robert. And we are now only $80 away from being done with fundraising for the month of November. That's amazing. Thanks, Labor Man. Thanks very much. So wrap it up, Rush.
Somebody has either written this for him or gotten to him. This is just pure Marxism.
What's that called? Oh yeah, the paranoid style in American politics. Somebody's gotten to him. It couldn't possibly be that this priest, this Jesuit, and you know, it's the Jesuits who always get it. Yeah. They take that whole academics thing seriously, those members of the Society of Jesus. Couldn't possibly be that he read the actual words of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, and said, I don't see anything here about he who dies with the most toys wins. Couldn't possibly be that. No, the paranoid style in American politics dictates that he declare that what was this again?
But regardless, what this is, somebody has either written this for him or gotten to him. This is just pure Marxism coming out of the mouth of the Pope. There's no such unfettered capitalism that doesn't exist anywhere.
Oh, doesn't it? Well, if there are fetters, you've bitched about them, Rush. He couldn't possibly be saying that he thinks fettering capitalism is okay. Going back to Raphael, a note from Shorty in L.A. I really understand this hearing from the Creator. Seriously. Okay, this is going to hurt. One, there's medication for his hearing problem. They're called SSRIs. Two, I guess he knew it was God because his brain has caller ID. Three, oh yeah, he left out the part that he is lying through his teeth. And four, I know this because the Creator told me so. Ha! So take that, Raphael. Thanks, Shorty. From Robert in Australia. Bob, naturally, we don't have Thanksgiving here in Australia, so we don't have Black Friday, but we do have the Boxing Day sales. That's December 26th. You know, that's also my son's birthday. And had to explain to him when he was little why a friend of ours who was from the UK referred to him lovingly. Oh, what a sweet human being she was. She has since gone on. She referred to him as, "My Boxing Day, baby." But yes, so Robert notes, we do have the Boxing Day sales, December 26th. The stores try to offload all the crap they couldn't sell before Christmas. After a number of people were injured back in the 1980s during the stampedes to get into the stores to buy one of the only 10 available 50% off items, fridges, TVs, and so forth, the state governments politely told the stores not to do it again. We still have the sales, but entry into the stores is very well controlled, at least last time I checked. I worked in the computer department of a large retail store here in Sydney for a number of years, and every Wednesday night we printed the stock reports. A casual glance showed the incredible markup on just about everything being sold. Even with a 50% discount, the store still made money, or at least they didn't lose any. So for me, sales have always been a massive joke. Meanwhile, in the last few days, I've received numerous Black Friday sale emails, and sadly, one of them came from a company in the UK. As I said, we don't have Thanksgiving here in Australia, but I'm pretty sure the various big retail chains will try to adopt it over the coming years. Oh, no, 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 no. No, they'll, it's an emotional thing, Thanksgiving is. And it's all wrapped up in the Civil War and the genocide of the native peoples. Trust me, you don't want it, Robert. But that's no reason for retailers to say, hey, look, over there. They're having it. We should, too. It's kind of like saying, you know, my neighbor's got the clap. Why don't we get it, too? Because that's what this is. This is capitalist, syphilitic capitalism. There. That's it. Syphilitic capitalism. What a lovely image that is for us all. And this from Dr. John. Rush doesn't know what he's talking about. And, surprise, money does not equal capitalism. Capitalism requires money, but money itself does not presuppose capitalism. Yes, because all that scads of money that it takes to run the Vatican, most of that was ginned up long time before capitalism ever even got a name. But according to Flush Flimball, yeah. According to Flush Flimball, it's Marxism for a man who is supposed to be who's supposed to spend his time worrying about people's souls to remark on the things that the economic system does to them. That's Marxism. I think I would dare extend Dr. John's remarks with his kind permission to say that Rush doesn't know from Shinola about Marxism either. Marxism is the boogeyman in Rush's dreams that takes away his pills. Marxism is the nightmare creature that lives under his bed that takes away little boys from his filthy clutches. Marxism is what keeps him from being able to afford the lavish mansion that surrounds the pit in which he keeps his wife. You see how it works. Right. Exactly, Waggy. Straw man, party of one. No, in fact, a lot of the wealth of the... a lot of the wealth of the church was developed during the Middle Ages. And a lot of the wealth of the church came in as... Look up line of demarcation. The Pope didn't divide the Western Hemisphere between Portugal and Spain out of the goodness of his heart. Oh, no. He got, as the line from the movie goes, he got to wet his beak in what was coming back eastward from the massive wealth of the West. And we ain't talking about tomatoes and chilies. No, no. Yeah, right. Waggy in the chat room pointing out Rome was a friggin' empire for centuries before capitalism got a name. But the Roman Church had some hard times. There was a time when, in fact, Rome itself was reduced to less than 5,000 inhabitants, if you can imagine. Yeah. By far... the much more vast level of wealth was held in the eastern portion of the empire, centered at Constantinople, with also governmental outposts. I mean, Rome had ceased to be the seat of the Western Empire before the empire even broke into two pieces. Emperors had to be nearer the trouble spots. That's how you wind up with the Roman capital being at one point in Milan. And at another point in Trier, which incidentally is Germany, I believe that Julian the Apostate, who was two emperors, the second emperor after Constantine, was proclaimed Augustus in the young city of Paris. So yeah, I mean, well, then again, things you'll never hear discussed on Flush Phlegm Balls, opioid-influenced... Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Irish Dave. Irish Dave pointing out, medical alert, you can contract syphilitic capitalism from sitting on a solid gold toilet seat, like at the Pentagon. Robert in Australia following up, he says, sorry, Bob, I meant to say that stores will try to adopt the concept of the Black Friday sale. Still, I wouldn't put it past them to try and inflict Thanksgiving on us as well. Mind you, Halloween never took off here, even after years of pushing it. Well, that's true. You do have an indigenous population who were probably preyed upon, by European invaders, so that you got to have that before you can have a really proper Thanksgiving. Huh? Texas Betsy pointing out our history textbook calls capitalism a political system. Okay, it always struck me as economic, but who the hell am I? But no, this you get the idea. Okay, so we got Stuart Varney, we got Flush Flimball, and then, and it gives me no joy to point it out, Cliff Kincaid. Also burned up by Pope Frank daring to say something not very nice about capitalism. This guy's a real Lulu, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not here to beat up on the Pope. That's not my job. But I can read this document. I can see what he's saying.
I can read! As if there's someone standing behind the camera going, no, you can't. No, you I can read. This is something he calls America's survival. Oh, help me.
And I can tell you right now that this is a very, very disappointing document. And it makes me wonder about the future of the Roman Catholic Church in this world and what they're heading towards. Now, those familiar with my website, religiousleftexposed.com, should go to that website. And
no, you shouldn't. No, don't. Don't give him the traffic. He's probably selling survival seeds or some such shit there. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against having your money not taken away from you by rapacious people who say, buy gold now. See this thing on my head? My vacuum cleaner will pick it up and put it back down on a Swedish bowling ball.
Reports we've published over the years about Marxism inside the Roman Catholic Church.
I want you to understand before I get to, hey, Bob, I can help you with that audio thing. That's not me. That's him. That's a guy who does not know how. No. Now, Cliff Kincaid runs an outfit called Accuracy in Media. He's a hustler who's been around for a long time. And has not figured out what it means when the lights on the VU meter go into the red place.
Including the U.S. branch of the Roman Catholic Church. There is a Marxism problem here. And we've got lengthy reports and documents that go into that. And please, take some time. And even if you're not a Catholic, take some time, because the Roman Catholic Church is the biggest denomination in the United States. I've got videos up on that website. Click on the first document on the left side of the homepage, religiousleftexposed.com, and you will see videos I produced myself. I took myself. Demonstrating where the Roman Catholic Church is headed. And this is based on statements by one of their leading lights, Father J. Brian Hare.
Really? Father Hare? Okay.
Who used to be with the U.S. Catholic Conference in terms of...
And is now doing 11 to 21? No, that's me.
World government. And there are parts of this document from Pope Francis that suggest that too. He refers to, let me get the exact, now he's got a little bit more camouflaged and flowery language in these terms. He says, if we really want to achieve a healthy world economy, what is needed at this juncture of history is a more efficient way of interacting, which, with due regard for the sovereignty of each nation, ensures the economic well-being of all countries. Now, granted, he does have a throwaway line about national sovereignty, but this is still consistent with documents we've seen coming out of the Roman Catholic Church for over 10 years, actually longer than that, decades.
And you know what it's also consistent with? It's consistent with a Palestinian day laborer and barely literate itinerant rabbi who said, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and follow me. It's also very much consistent with that. See, you can't find the Laffer curve inside the Gospels. It's just not there. You can't find capitalism in the Gospels. It, too, is not there. Well, Jesus had a sword. Shut up. Those that live by the sword shall die by the sword. How about that? Jesus had a sword. Troubling. So you get the idea. The hissy is on. Where's Bill Donahue in this? What's got him so worked up? This. It is no longer simply about exploitation and oppression, but something new. Exclusion ultimately has to do with what it means to be a part of the society in which we live. Those excluded are no longer society's underside or its fringes or its disenfranchised. They are no longer even a part of it. The excluded are not the exploited, but the outcast, the leftovers. In this context, some people continue to defend trickle-down theories, which assume that economic growth encouraged by a free market will inevitably succeed in bringing about greater justice and inclusiveness in the world. This opinion, which has never been confirmed by the facts, because that's true. There's nothing factual. This is just a fantastical wet dream of right-wing greed monkeys who, if you just give us all the money, we'll let you have some back, okay? This opinion, which has never been confirmed by the facts, expresses a crude and naive trust in the goodness of those wielding economic power and in the sacralized workings of the prevailing economic system. Meanwhile, the excluded are still waiting. And they wait. And wait. And wait. Wow. And that's what's got them all burned up. So I'm trying to see if, because he's such a loopy old piece of crap. Bill Donahue over at the Catholic League that has a sword in its trademark. And Bill is trying to walk a fine line. Of course, he's busy, Bill Donahue is, Bill's busy being at war with Bill Maher. Irish Dave noting documents? They have documents. I see, says Irish Dave. All this is only because capitalism is hiding in the Holy Constitution. No, wait. Hey, further good news. Thank you very much to Thomas Jug of Punch. We are now only $40 away from being done with fundraising for the month of November, and not a moment too soon. So thank you very much, Thomas, for everyone for whom you all help to make the horn possible. I will offer my own thanks on behalf of all. So here endeth the lesson on this Friday on the front porch. Oh, there's more. There's more. Hey, he's been gone for a while, but I've got some Chappie Klingenschmidt. That didn't come out right, did it? No. No. Not at all. So we will presently be firing up Friday on the front porch, I presume. Jump on in. You can come in either via the Skype group or via the traditional telephone lines. There are three of those available at the moment. 304-658-3333 is the number. And you are more than welcome to participate in this roundtable conversation that has become a staple of Friday evenings. Oh, let's see. Yeah, hey, we can play this kind of stuff now. It's the day after Thanksgiving. Works very well for me. This is Conversation Radio. Radio unlike any other. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The streets are filled with laughter and light, and the music of the season, and the merchants' windows are all bright with the faces of the children, and the families hurrying to their homes as the sky darkens and freezes. We'll be gathering around their hearths and tables, giving thanks for God's graces and the birth of the rebel Jesus. Oh, they're calling by the Prince of Peace, and they're calling by the Savior, and they pray to Him upon the seas and in every bold endeavor, and they fill His churches with their pride and gold as their faith in Him increases. But they've turned the nature that I worship in from a temple to a robber's den, in the words of the rebel Jesus. The same as the rebel Jesus. But pardon me if I have seemed to take the tone of judgment, for I've no wish to come between this day and your enjoyment. In a life of hardship and of earthly toil, there's a need for anything that frees us. So I bid you pleasure and I bid you cheer from a heathen and a pagan on the side of the rebel Jesus.
a lovely little lyric. Jackson Browne and the Rebel Jesus. There's also a version with the Chieftains that's pretty damn good, too. Friday on the Front Porch is what this is, the 29th day of November 2013. And it's time to get the front porch portion of the program started. Hey, is that you, Bill?
Yep.
All right, and next, let's see, too many buttons. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim.
What's up?
All right, so we got Jim and Bill over on the traditional phone lines, and on the Skype line, we've got Skype group roll call. We got Duncan.
Yes,
here. There's Duncan, and we've got Waggy.
Yeah, affirmative.
And we have Larry. Hey, Larry.
Hi there.
Okay, so Friday on the front porch. What's up?
Well, I wanted to just say I talked to that friend of yours that was in Red Bluff a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
On the phone when he was here. It was working, so we didn't meet up, but we will be talking about your place in the future, hopefully.
Cool.
And then next time he comes to Red Bluff, we'll meet up or something. He got me to look at your roof of your house on Google Earth, if that's the right house.
Probably is.
It just looked like a white roof.
Yeah, that's us. That's kind of, well, it's faded over the years, and that photograph is old enough that you can't see the missing spots where the shingles ain't.
Yeah. I was looking at my place last night, and they upgraded it from this last summer. You can see cattle out in the pasture.
Or as we like to refer to them around here, slow elk.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, there's Sergi.
Good evening.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
That was a great bit about God talking to people. Most of the time when you hear voices, they lock you up.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing the stuff you can get away with.
You know, and then it's like, and that started me thinking God must hate me because he never says anything to me.
Well, I like to say that it's not that God's not talking to me. It's that I quit talking to him.
All I have is tinnitus from working around loud noises and.
Oh no, that's engines, no. Duncan, that's Satan. Those are little demons in your ears.
I know they ruined mine.
Oh no! All kidding aside, tinnitus is nothing to laugh about. I've got it, and mine has to do with years and years and years and years with some sort of headphones on.
Yep. That'll do you.
But
oh, really? Just listen to the radio? Working on the radio will do that to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, of course, one of the nice things is that modern technology, now there are in-ear monitors, and I've got a set, kindly provided to me by a very dear friend who's in that business. They take impressions of your ear just like they would for a hearing aid. And these are monitors. John Fox, knows all about them. It's the way to go. Instead of having those, and Bill, you probably know, the wedge monitors at the edge of the stage that blow back at you.
Yeah.
Instead of that, now it's all just in-ear stuff, and it goes a long way towards saving a whole lot of hearing because you don't, among other things, you don't have to drive it at nearly the levels that even headphones require, and God knows that stage monitors require.
Well, Bob, I worked without them for years because they were, and probably why I'm having trouble right now with sore throat and such, and it always scares me to death because they ran a biopsy on me at age 32 on my vocal cords because of scar tissue. But it's probably just laryngitis. I've had it off and on a lot like everybody else.
Well, I have to ask because yours was the horn social event of the day yesterday. How'd it go?
Wonderful. Wonderful people, great food. What more can you ask for on a holiday?
Amen to that.
And that's the first time since geez, 2000 and I know that I've been able to do that, get out with people and good family and good folks. I'll just let go with one more thing. Buddy stopped over to see me and he told me that my the connection that I can open my apartment, I can open the downstairs door from my apartment, that's been disconnected. And you know, it takes quite a while to evict me totally. It would take till the middle of January. And I've got guys coming in and starting to pack next week, and I actually got a new place to go, but these people are playing shit with you. And I'd like to go down there and just smash a couple of them, but can't do that either anymore.
And but you don't know anybody, you don't know any big burly types who might, you know.
Oh, I know a few. I've got a number of people.
But you're above that, Bill. You're above that.
If people want to call and harass people, I've got a phone number for it, so which I'll give. I'll let slip later. But I'm kind of ticked right now, pretty ticked off, because we're working on, you know, working on getting packers and such, because I just can't do it anymore, Bob. It's like, what the hell is being blind? Is this a handicap or what? You know, and the bastards play with you.
I'm not totally blind. I'm partially blind because of peripheral vision, because of brain surgery I had when I was 10. And even that, I can get behind the wheel of a car, but my peripheral vision's gone out on the right side, so I can't drive. And that puts people act like that's still a big deal, but that has a big impact. Like, for you, Bob, I mean, I know you live, seems like, in the middle of the country or something.
Say the least, yeah.
Yeah, but without driving, it would be a long walk to get anywhere, I imagine.
Oh, it is a sentence of sorts, Jim. I talk often about my grandmother. In her later years, she paid a lady to come and drive her to the grocery store once every week or 2 weeks or so, and if you can't line that up, it is, you know, you're literally besieged in your own home, I guess, is the way to put it.
Well, you just hit something beautifully, because part of what we have lost in this country is public transportation systems have been destroyed. They got rid of all the electric stuff years ago. They caught the guy in Cleveland rigging the bidding on buses to favor GM. He got fired. He went out and opened BART, but still, he got fired here because of connivance. And I'd have to say that this is why our public transit stinks so bad. The hell with you. Buy a car. God knows I had enough of it.
Oh, and there's no public transportation around here. Public transportation here is your 2 feet walking on the side of the road.
Well, some of the cities I really admire on the West Coast and such, a lot of bicycles, you know, and it's a nice thing to do. I mean, it's probably the best exercise you can get, because it gets you where you want to go, too. And it's good. I lost 50-some pounds back when I was 50, bicycling 10 miles, 15 miles a day for exercise and eating a very low-fat content food, you know, keeping down to 10% instead of 30, that weight came off of me like I couldn't. And I was 50 freaking years old. I lost 50 pounds in like 4 months or 5 months. That's an unreal. But it's the amount of fat that we eat in this country that really is what the hell tastes better, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the great French cooking schools all say fat is flavor.
Yep.
And there's nothing quite like the traditional feast of yesterday to sort of rub that in.
I'll just finish by saying I had a great time yesterday. It was delightful to be around real human beings again instead of bingo players and, you know, that kind of crap. But anyway, open up. I'll shut up.
Well, I appreciate. Well, we all wanted the report, Bill. There's no doubt about that. Let's bring another line on. Hey, who we got here?
This is Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing okay.
And we got one more line open on the traditional lines, 304-658-3333. And, of course, let's see. Well, Jay Cruzen was in there, and Jay Cruzen's gone. Lottie. Lottie is in the Skype group. Good evening, Lottie.
Good evening.
How in the world are you?
How's everything going?
Pretty good.
Not too bad.
Good dinner yesterday. I mean, knowing you, yeah, it was a good dinner yesterday, right?
Here we go.
Oh, food porn. Excellent. Excellent dinner. I was over at my sister's house. We had a blast.
Awesome.
All turkey and all the fixings.
Well, and by the way, I didn't mention it. I should have. I planned on being on the air last night, and then came back here to fire everything up, and suddenly had no ISP. So that's where that went. My apologies.
Did you get the snowstorm yesterday or something?
No. No, it was two nights ago. But apparently, no. I mean, most of the snow was going away. No, I think I just, you know. We have a very expensive, very crappy ISP.
Okay.
You got a lousy electric company too, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen the one in Cleveland go from very good to crap because they bought out all the old linemen and all the old guys and brought in a bunch of people at half the price.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing.
Well, they don't have the skill that the old timers had. In fact, that big outage on the East Coast, what, 10, 11, how many years ago?
Yeah.
That started south of here in Brecksville, Ohio, was the starting point for that stage. And as more and more companies came on having to tie in, they just showed how poor the electrical grid is because they all kept crapping out. It was 10 to 12 hours without electricity up here.
And of course, we had we had two massive outages here in the space of 4 months. We had the derecho, which did damage. I've talked about that in the past. That we're still getting over. Took out a part of the stove, took out the fridge, took out the freezer, took out the water heater, took out, and
anything that's hooked up can get jolted into the next world. You're right.
Right, and but everything that was on an uninterruptible power supply is fine. But we were out of power for 12 days with that, and then when Sandy hit the East Coast, we got the blizzard out of it, and that was, I think, a week or something. We were out of power, and in large part, it's not because the grid can't stand it. It's because these public utilities, which are supposed to be public servants, that's they have an effective monopoly, and that's why we have a public service commission, supposedly.
Yep.
Nobody compels them to obey the law. You know, in a mountainous, highly wooded state like West Virginia, it's by definition there's going to be a lot of power lines going through a lot of woods.
Woods, yep.
And they have a legally granted to them right of way on your property.
Yep.
And a right to, that means they've got to have, you have to let them have access to their lines, et cetera, et cetera. But, they're also charged with the duty of maintaining those right of ways. And they don't. Which basically means that you wind up with power lines perched on for all intents and purposes, toothpicks. And when the trees get loaded up with snow, especially if it's a heavy, wet snow, branches start coming down, power lines snap, and people wind up without power.
Well, a friend of mine who was going to stop here for a few minutes works for a company that cuts trees along the private electricity right away. And they didn't start doing heavy work until after that big outage 10 years ago.
Asplund?
Davey, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Well, I want to step in here for a minute on that, Bob. West Virginia is kind of unique there, bro. I went up there on an ice storm several years ago, and we worked in right-of-ways that were cut 100 feet wide, but the trees were so damn tall they still fell and took the power lines out.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, Jay Cruz. And there are places, you know, for the high-tension wires and stuff, they cut those big right-of-ways.
This was a stupid little single phase line, and we had 20 guys on the side of a mountain for 5 days to put on power to 10 cabins up on the side of one of your godforsaken mountains.
Yeah, now, quit that. We like our mountains. Or no, what's left of them. Well, or what's left of them.
We left our trucks at the bottom of the hill and drug all our gear up there by hand, and bulldozer, and some guy had some type of track vehicle that took us up there.
That sounds about right.
But, we worked our nuts off.
But for instance, by the same token, Jay Cruz, and I could take you within a mile of where I sit right now and show you power lines on toothpicks that are just running through the middle of the woods, period. And it's flat and it's flat ground.
Yeah, and they burn their way through the trees. That's the way they stay up. I've seen that too.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm with you, man. They need to do a hell of a lot more tree trimming. They need to do a lot more down here where I work too. They just don't do it.
But that leads inexorably to a discussion of the future too, I think, and that is the gentle reminder that the United States power outages in the United States are measured in days per year. Whereas power outages in a place like Germany, where they're building a smart grid, where they've got decentralized production of electricity via wind and solar, their outages are measured in minutes per year, not even hours.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I want to correct you on one more thing, Bob. You said public utilities. Well, they're not public. They're privately owned.
Oh, they are. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's supposed to be overseen by the public, like you said, by the PSC, but guess what? Guess who is in the pocket of the private utilities?
Oh, you mean the guys with the money flowing out of their pocket? Those guys.
Yeah, those guys.
The PSC is in the private utilities pocket.
Yeah, you don't get a seat on the Public Service Commission unless you've already been in the employ of one of the outfits you're regulating. No doubt. You're absolutely correct, and I should not have said public utilities. Now, there are places where there are utility co-ops and things like that are public in nature, but not here.
Well, you know what got Dennis Kucinich in a lot of trouble when he was mayor?
Oh, the Muni.
Yep. Puny Muni, yep.
Yeah, they were...
Who supplies your power anyway, by the way, Bob?
Appalachian Power.
Well, when I was working up there, it was for Allegheny.
Yeah. That's the northern end of the state, and then Appalachian Power, which is a division of American Electric Power, does the southern part of the state. I think Allegheny's also owned by American Electric, but they're totally different entities.
Well, they were going bankrupt, or supposedly were, when I was up there, and I'll tell you what, it was some horror stories I could tell you about working on that system. Jesus.
Spitting toilet paper?
And we ate Subway sandwiches. They brought us Subway sandwiches out. It was like the second day, and they brought big, huge tubs full of them, big Tupperware bins full of Subway sandwiches. We ate the same subs for 5 days.
Oh, brother.
So it was so cold, they were all frozen. And we just left them on the back of the truck and warmed them up on the dash of the trucks to eat them the next day.
Hey, speaking of, I mean, you've dealt, I mean, granted, you're not in cold weather country, but you've worked in it. What do you, when you're on a job like that, Jay Cruzen, what do you do to stay warm? I mean, I can tolerate just about anything except cold, wet feet.
You and me both. Once my feet get cold, I'm done.
Try to get some good boots with Sensolate in them.
Yep.
Well, you got to
wear some heavy socks, and then when it's really cold weather, when I was working in the colder parts of the state, when I was working on the freeway, I had insulated coveralls.
Yeah, you wear all that and you walk around like the damn Michelin man, but you can't work like that.
Basically,
if you got more people than you have trucks to get in the cab of and get warm on your brakes, you huddle around the exhaust of the truck and then you go home smelling like diesel exhaust.
So do you have a go-to brand of boot?
I use Wolverines, but I'm out of the cold now, so, and I hope to never go back.
We will try to keep any blizzard like disasters from befalling until such time as you can make sure you don't. But it's a darn shame. You should see this place under better circumstances or better settings, because it's got to be. Look, I mean, this is a mountainous region. It's always going to be a challenge to bring services in here. When my mother was a little girl, the electricity they had in their houses was provided by Delco batteries.
Yep.
And you ran your batteries out, and you took them, and you traded them in on a newly charged one.
You know, I was living in one place running the computer off of deep cycles. When you had a boat, you had two or three deep cycles. And I would use that when everything else was down, you know.
But you know, between my mother's family's Delco batteries and, you know, power outages in the Appalachians that last for days, and hell, it's not just Appalachia for that matter. I think DC with the derecho was out of power for a week, or parts of it were. You know, that you would think that would bring up a meaningful discussion about how do you keep this from happening.
Well, do they want it to stop happening? I think, somebody pointed out in Germany, it's only a couple of minutes of downtime as opposed to days in the U.S. And so they can just, you know, it's the capitalist system, so they can just keep charging more.
Well, and that's true, because they do go. They go back and they say, "Well, we need a rate increase."
Yeah.
Well, it's just also like they, if you work, you know, after you get a certain amount of experience, then they don't want to pay you anymore. So you either, you know, you go somewhere else, or they fire you. They'll find some reason to fire you, and then they just hire newer people for less who don't know as much, and.
And unless you've got some sort of job protection via a union, there's nothing really to stop them, is there?
Well, I'm gonna put a stop to that right now. The whole thing about it is that it's for profit, and they do anything and everything they can to show a profit to their shareholders. They will cut people. They will do anything they have to. And until you take that profit motive out of it, then that's the way it's going to be.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah, you're taking something that's a survival thing and making it a for-profit thing. And
see, I think that's probably at the core. You know, I was running all of this audio of these right-wing freaks having a low-rent hissy over Pope Frank and his saying that, you know, trickle-down economics is a mad fantasy. This sort of thing is what lies at the core of those hissies, because they're... I think maybe just barely incrementally, but I think there is a growing realization that there are parts of our civic life that should not be dedicated first and foremost to someone else's profit.
Well, they're tougher to operate when they're for profit. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the problem is when you're for profit. Well, healthcare is now a for profit industry, so what, you know.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm getting at, Bill. People's sickness and ability to recover from illness or injury should not be a part of the profit motive. Your ability to get a clean glass of water out of the tap should not be a part of the profit motive. Your ability to keep your home warm in the winter should not be a part of the profit motive.
Well, a lot of these HUD buildings, buildings that are, you know, elderly. Believe me, don't believe they're not for profit.
Oh no, that brutally so, probably, I guess.
Guaranteed money from the federal government, and boy, they got their hands open. They like it.
Hey, let me bring on a caller into the last slot here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey.
All right, so.
What you guys are talking about sounds a lot like IBM here in Vermont. They'll lay off 800 people who have been there for 40 years to bring on twice as many immigrants. God bless them for doing the job, but they pay...
Yeah, with H-1B visas?
Yes, exactly.
And then they'll claim that they did that because there just aren't enough qualified workers in the United States.
Right, but they had people who have been there for 40 years as senior management, and they could be either just before retirement or just after, and they'll cut them loose before their pension's filled out, so they owe them nothing. And they'll say, here's X amount of days of severance pay for as many years you've worked here. After that, it's tough to relinquish.
Right.
I mean, General Dynamics does the same thing. That's where my mom's husband worked for the last 20 years. But, I mean, basically last December, he was told, hey, you have till November, and then we're cutting you loose. Thankfully, he was at the time of retirement, but it's the same idea. They rented space from IBM here in Vermont because IBM is slowly shifting, phasing this plant out and going to Catskill, New York. Even though they'll never admit it, it's happening.
Right, well, just like Ford and the car companies were complaining they couldn't make money with all the quote-unquote money the workers were getting, so now they basically bought out all the workers who've been there 20 years, 25, 30 years or whatever, and then they so they hired new people, and they all hired a pay, you know, instead of, I don't know, $20, $30 an hour, they're paying them $14. But the car prices haven't gone down. I haven't checked them, but I don't think they've gone down.
That's for damn sure you're right. I got a funny story about a buddy of mine who was a lineman for years. And he was on his way to a wedding. He's tuxed up for the wedding, and it started pouring. And he looks at a stoplight, and the crew that he used to work with was working. He got out and gave him a hand with something. He's wearing a tuxedo, and he said, you can imagine all the customers from the old CEI were standing there as they drove by and saw a guy with a tuxedo working as a lineman. They were figuring, that's why my damn bill's so high. Look at that guy. I mean, that's one of those funny things in life that's funnier than a joke you could write.
Yeah, going back to the car manufacturers, though, U.S. car manufacturers went broke because they were manufacturing a shitty product.
Oh, yeah.
The reason they were manufacturing a shitty product is because they wanted to take a hell of a lot of profits, and they kept using crappy-ass parts from the lowest bidder.
Yep.
When you look at a car manufacturer like BMW, you know, sure, the cars cost a little bit more than what we make here, but you look at the quality. And everything is made perfectly to fit, not by the lowest bidder, but by the company.
Well, that's like the early Fords in the 70s were nothing but rust buckets. So to fix that problem, I hired Bill Cosby as a spokesman. I tell you, they weren't rusting like crazy. When you bought your first car, when you were a kid, and I bought my first one.
After 4 years, and replaced the radiator five times.
You had to stop and buy Bondo on the way home.
And the German car manufacturers, look at what they pay their workers.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
6 weeks.
They make a damn good living. They got tons of vacation. They got sick time. They got health care for free. They got this and that and everything else.
Well, sometimes I wonder about my American friends who, they didn't want a lot of vacation time because they get bored easily.
Okay. And here's the number one factor is that any company over such a size in Germany is required to have, what is it, 50 or 49% of their board of directors made up by representatives of labor?
Yep.
And guess who enforced that on, guess who suggested to enforce that on them? That was us after World War II.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't just come up with that. And the same thing.
We couldn't do it here, so we did it for them.
Right, the same thing goes for the participatory model in Japanese industry.
Yeah, they said you had a Democrat in the White House, a real Democrat back from the 40s.
Yeah, that was of our making. We did that. And they prosper from it while we, our working people, just get shafted just like always.
Well, it's like somebody in my family, I'm not going to name, or actually a couple of them made the comment about people were, you know, what some of the stores that were opening to get the early jump on Jesus's birthday celebration, you know, they were opening early Thanksgiving Day, a day supposedly reserved for family and getting in touch with the highest sky being, but not when profit. profits involved, you know. And then these people, these companies, these people are making buku money. You know, they're making a little, probably a couple of percent over minimum wage, you know, 10-20%.
Oh, hey, I thought you guys would appreciate this. There's an, you remember the Pizza Hut story from before before Thanksgiving? The guy who said, you know, hell no, I'm not working?
Offered his job back.
Yeah, he got his job back. Because this was an independent franchisee, and the Pizza Hut home office took so much hell from so many people who were so outraged over this that they reached out to the individual franchisee and said, what are you trying to do to us?
Well, people are waking up.
Yeah.
You'll get
a charge out of this bill there in Ohio. Apparently a bill has been or will be introduced. This according to Think Progress. A bill will be introduced in the Ohio legislature that mandates that workers who are compelled to work national holidays be paid triple time. Naturally, the person introducing the piece of legislation is not a Repiglican.
Is he a socialist?
Representative Mike Foley, Democrat.
Impressive.
I can forget that one, but...
Yeah, you know how far that's going.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice idea, but that kind of blew me away at Thanksgiving, hearing not once or twice, but something about these people having to work early, you know, for Thanksgiving and what. And they just had no compassion for them at all. It's kind of like, well, it's their bed, they made it, you know, let them lay in it.
Right.
Kind of attitude, kind of. Actually, it reminds me of Calvinism, you know.
Well, I think that's probably because it is.
Yeah, well, these are Catholics. So they profess to be. But I guess Calvinism got its dirty claws in Catholicism, you know.
Right. So.
Well, there are some traditional Catholics, the kind that I was happy to see go away in the 60s. But they're back. They want to go back to the Latin Mass and the you play dominoes, I play dominoes stuff.
Right, and of course that's I guess that's all in resistance to Vatican II. Mel Gibson, for instance, is a big proponent of that.
Yeah.
No, really, it's that they do the Mass in Latin because, you know, Wolverines or Jesus or something. And,
yeah.
Because everybody knows that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and barely literate itinerant rabbi, spoke Latin.
Yeah.
Only not.
Well, it's just like you pointed out a couple of weeks ago, which I wasn't fully aware of, the buku different versions of the Bible and how it was originally written in street Greek, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, Koine Greek. I mean, it's you almost have to take different courses to study it. If you want to learn ancient Greek and read Homer, it's rather radically different from Koine. Koine is kind of guttery. It's Greek for the barely literate.
Right. Well, I mean, I could try and bring that up to people. It's just like a lot of Christians, particularly ones who kind of proselytize to you, not that I'm, but I just remember, you know, running, people trying to do that to me, and you ask them about their knowledge of Christianity, and they're not even aware of the big difference between Catholicism and Protestantism, because I remember when I was working at the Venetian, a guy, you know, I think, well, you don't believe God? I'm like, no. Well, what do you think happens when you die? Nothing, blah, blah, blah. Then he's like, and I said, well, okay, well, you're a Christian. Yeah, and then I said, what kind? I believe in Jesus. Well, no, you're a Protestant or a Catholic. And I could tell by the look in his eyes, he didn't even know what the hell I was talking about. You know? Didn't know anything about the Protestant Reformation or the wars that have been fought over the centuries. And even now, to this day, you got wars over religion going on.
Another, just to sort of, I don't know. It might fit, or it might be a total non sequitur. More and more stories are coming out about what yesterday meant in the United States. A driver of a car that was dragging a police officer after the officer had responded to an allegation of shoplifting. Well, his partner shot the driver of that car. Then in Virginia, and by the way, I gotta get on my soapbox over this one. I've seen this story two or three times today, and they say, brutal fighting breaks out in West Virginia. No, the TV station reporting it is WVVA out of West Virginia, but it happened in Tazewell, Virginia. But either any way you slice it, you'll see why I said that. A man got slashed to the bone with a knife.
Jeez.
When he pulled his gun out to protect freedom, and the other guy had a knife and slashed him all the way to the bone. This, of course, happened in a fight over a parking spot at Wally World.
Well, that's seldom the guy that brings the knife to the gunfight wins it. That's good to hear.
Well, yeah, and every now and then the possum gets all the way across the road, Bill.
Yeah, it's true.
But this is becoming our national day of self-embarrassment.
Well, we had a fight.
Well, actually, in my opinion, it's not just that. This day just emphasizes it, because this is something I've kind of noticed. The constant reminder of how great capitalism is, and it's subtle, that it's not so subtle over, the media. Am I seeing things that aren't there? I mean, it seems to me like every time you turn on TV, that's all you hear about how great capitalism is. There's no faults, and everything can be. Capitalism can cure anything. It can cure AIDS. It can cure this and cure that,
I got a story, quick story from yesterday. You know the little newspaper delivery boxes that attach to your mailbox?
Oh, yes.
Well, we get two papers here. My wife gets the local paper, and then my dad gets the Reading paper. Well, the papers were so loaded with ads that they crammed them into that little paper mailbox thing, and he come into the house. I mean, a 95-year-old guy, he still drives the coffee every morning. He comes home, tries to get his paper out of that mailbox, and he comes in the house cussing up a storm because there was so much shit in there. I mean, he had a hell of a time getting it out, and he dropped some of it all over the place, and he was all pissed off because it was like a stack of newspaper about a foot, not a foot tall, but I mean around, and it just advertisements and everything. And then
get a hernia carrying the thing in.
My wife goes through them all, and then she puts them in a plastic bag, and she goes, "Can you take these over to her neighbor?" I said, "Why?" And she's, "Because he's going to Black Friday tomorrow, or tonight. I don't know." So I took him over there.
I mean, this is beginning to resemble something out of a Ray Bradbury novel.
Yep.
Definitely.
Hey, I'm gonna ask here. We've got a blinking light on the lines here, and all four of them full. Anybody want to make space?
I would, but it's only a little bit of my week.
I'll go ahead and let you. I'm gonna go. I'll talk
Jeremy's still on there. You can go to Skype.
Okay, yeah, I think that's what Jeremy's doing. Jeremy's going to Skype, so...
Hold on.
Hey, is that you, Dr. John?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well, I don't think you've ever come and played on Friday on the Front Porch before. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
No, it's exciting. Thanks a lot. Nice to hear from you guys.
Nice to hear from you.
Right. Well, y'all are talking my language, and I'm enjoying listening. I guess the only thing I have to bring really is I just got back from 12 years of slave, and I was wondering if anyone has caught that or is planning to.
I definitely want to see it because I read that book. I forget if I read it in a Louisiana history class in high school or college. I wanted to see it, but in the rural era, the World Theater, they have a 12-plex, and I went and checked it out. I haven't seen it playing, but I'm going to go check it out and see if it's playing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally worth it. It's powerful. It's pretty brutal, of course, but I mean, I guess that's what you expect. But I highly, highly recommend it.
Well,
definitely. No, I mean, I should be a little sarcastic. What do you mean, slavery brutal? No, that's
yeah, right. You're right. Surprise, right?
And interestingly, 12 Years a Slave, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you catch? There was a story, I guess, from last week, and it never made it out of the stack. But perfect timing, John. I'm trying to find it here. It's a beautiful. I mean, there it is. Yeah, I'll have it up here in a second. Anybody know who John Derbyshire is?
Nine.
Okay, this is the racist freak who wrote for or writes for, I'm not sure which, Wall Street Journal. Yeah, I mean he's a high level slug.
Ooh.
No, I'm sorry. He got he's such a racist he got bounced from the National Review.
Jeez. That's an insult to slugs.
And that's what he got bounced for. This is the guy who wrote the screed that said how to talk to your little white children about black people.
Oh.
This is that guy. Remember all that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he wrote, and you know, they have special talents over on the right wing. They can write reviews of films they have not even seen.
Yeah, they're gifted, all right.
He decided to write about 12 Years a Slave because it just conceptually pisses him off.
You're right.
And in his piece, he said, "No, I haven't seen the thing, but I've read reviews, and also I've seen and reviewed a specimen of the allied genre, civil rights porn."
Ooh.
And every one of the tired, crappy old tropes gets dragged out. He says, "Well, for everyone that had the experience that is described in the film, there were other slaves who were very happy with their masters and had good masters."
Classy.
Oh, God.
Were those masturbators?
That is K.I. classy right there.
Yeah.
That is It's you know, the CLASS. Are you okay over there, Larry?
No, I'm not. I'm okay. I'm fine.
Okay. There's.
If you're gonna choke to death, Larry, go ahead and mute. We don't want to hear
it. Jesus.
It's okay. It's fine.
No, I get you, Sergi. Yeah, this is classy. That's spelled K K K L A S S.
It's wow. Ugh.
Man. You guys were talking about Christmas stuff, and again, Dennis Christenis figures in this one. Two guys in line in one of the department stores over Santa Claus. They got in a fight, which one was in front with his kids, and went to knives. One guy got hurt pretty bad, because Dennis spoke up about it when he was... I think he was in Congress by then. But I mean, so, yeah, that's... Bob, you were just talking about the guys getting into it over a parking space.
Yeah.
Boy, that's the Christmas spirit if I ever saw it.
Absolutely. Yeah, Larry.
You know, not really. One of the guys was 61 years old. He's the one with the knife. And the cat was with the gun, apparently, was 35. I don't know what that matter, what that means to the, you know, the conversation, but that's how the
Yeah, but once again, West Virginia gets the black eye. It happens in Virginia, but they blame it on West Virginia. Classic. Hey, getting back to this Derbyshire thing, John, you'll get a kick out of this. Derbyshire writes, and this is a quote, "Slavery is more irksome to some than to others, and freedom can be irksome, too. Personally, I'd be a terrible slave, too ornery. I know people, though, and I'm talking about white people, who I quietly suspect would be happy in slavery."
Are you kidding? You're not kidding.
No, I'm not.
Ornery.
I think we need to show this guy his way to the gallows.
Derbyshire, where is he from?
He's a right wing POS who for a while had some sort of, you know, he was treated. If you can string two words together and manage not to pick your teeth with your toenail clippings, you can be considered an intellectual in right wing circles.
Oh yeah, I mean I haven't watched Fox News in a long time, except in very small bits. But some of those people, they just get on. It's amazing.
They've got all the talking points memorized so well. It's just so unbelievable. It's just like a fucking.
With the exception of George Will or somebody like that, I don't know how you could be. Well, George Will, and who is that guy for ABC that used to do Nightline when Ted Koppel wasn't doing it? He was also on that William F. Buckley's program, Firing Line.
John Stossel.
A different guy with.
Was that a different porn stash?
I'll find it and contribute it when I find it.
John, jump in on this one, would you? Because I'm glad you brought up the opportunity. This Derbyshire piece, among other things he says in it, he says, U.S. slaves had much longer life expectations than free urban industrial workers in both the United States and Europe. So I guess that means it was okay?
Well, the thing about that is what that is an indictment of capitalism, really. I mean, at the end of the day, because I don't know that that is the case, but I know that slaves in the U.S. had a longer life expectancy than slaves in Brazil or the Caribbean. The climate was better. There were less imports, you know, when it was really kicking here in the U.S. But what that really says is that the working conditions for regular working folks in the industrial north were really, really crappy. So I don't think he's really arguing what he intends to be arguing there, if you follow me.
Yeah. He's comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah, and the point that this movie and the book it's based on makes is that the system itself was brutalizing for everybody. And what's real interesting is that the whole master-slave relationship gets replicated all throughout the South, and it's the way that the white aristocratic class, the one percenters of their day, and they really were, because a tiny fraction of white people actually owned slaves. It was tiny. They were literally the 1%.
Yeah, there were not enough of them to fight the Civil War, were there?
Oh no, right. they couldn't do that. So I mean, like they treated, you know, women and children and regular working poor white folks the same way they treated slaves. It was this relationship permeated all of society. It was brutal, just from top to bottom.
And yet,
from what I was reading, the planters created the whole notion of race, because they didn't want to have the poor whites and the poor blacks organizing and fighting against the hegemony that they had over their tobacco fields and stuff. So they created that whole concept and perpetuated it throughout the region, and that's how race and slavery got started. That's a simplistic analysis based upon whatever little bit of reading I've done. By the way, the reporter that I was thinking of, his first name is Jeff, but I can't remember his last name. He was with ABC, and he had glasses. And,
Jeff Greenfield?
Jeff Greenfield. Jeff Greenfield, right. Yeah. Right, well, Greenfield, yeah. So, okay. Any rate, okay.
The closer on this, and Alyssa Rosenberg over at Think Progress did the dissection. This is how Derbyshire closes out his non-review of 12 Years a Slave. In the matter of slavery, though, I already feel sure that the shallow, good North, bad South simplicities of abolitionist porn and popular perception bear little relation to the thorny tangles of reality. Abolitionist porn? Really? Wow. So we joke about food porn. I get that. But it's real. Wow.
What about rich people porn? Have you turned on cable and seen some of the channels, like people and their big problem, you know, Beverly Hills Housewives, you know, Santa Barbara Housewives, and this glorification of the rich? It started back with Dallas back in the late 70s, as I remember. You know, and then, what was the other one? You know, you had Dallas, the Hewings, you had the Falcons, all those shows.
Can you hear me, Bob?
Yeah, I got you, Kevin.
Dynasty, I think, is the other one you're thinking of, Jim. But Walmart, the other day, responding to the strike, they put out a email presser or something saying how happy most of their workers were and that the protest was by people that didn't have anything better to do. They were all unemployed people just coming out to protest for the fun of it. And, of course, they said that all their workers are happy and, you know, their workers are very satisfied with their working conditions, et cetera, ad nauseum. And how is that any different from this guy saying that slaves were happy with their masters? You know, how can anyone, unless they've been beaten down to such a point, like a PTSD Stockholm, Sweden type person, how can they be happy with their master? You're owned, you know. So it just is amazing to me that this, it's being discussed in 2013. And I guess one thing I want to kind of ask is, does anyone feel like we're winning the battle?
No,
got to the point where I feel like it's almost useless. Because these people have control of the Supreme Court, and things like the abortion law down in Texas, where they said that the law could go into effect until it's heard by the Supreme Court. Once it's heard by the Supreme Court and they approve it, that law is going to be in all 50 states, and we're going to see the end of Roe v. Wade. And there's nothing that can stop that, save one or two of these conservatives dying, because they're not going to give in to retiring. The same reason the four liberals haven't given in to retiring.
Yeah.
You know, they're too afraid of what would happen if they did. And
après moi le déluge. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you think maybe they'll start develop as they get closer to the Grim Reaper and death?
No.
They'll kind of start developing a conscience.
No.
Kind of like some of the people with the JFK kind of came forth with some.
Because they already think that they got it there. I mean, look, Tony Scalia knows he is in good with the Almighty. That's why he, you know, wears the hair shirt and the little piece of barbed wire around his leg. I mean, we have members of the Supreme Court of the United States who are members of Opus Dei, okay? Who are into, like, self-flagellation and other weird stuff. And they think, they got no come to Jesus. I mean, they're walking hand in hand, right? And challenging that only reinforces their own bizarre beliefs. But to go back to to go back for just a minute. Kevin, I would challenge you on one point, and that is this. I don't think all 50 states will do what to, or some variation of what Texas has done. What you will see is the further bifurcation of the United States into what I've referred to as a Plessyized United States, where a person can be cursed merely by the accident of which state they are born in. I don't think New York or Massachusetts or Illinois or Washington, Oregon, California will ever outlaw a woman's right to choose. But what you will see is, just as with health care, a nation that is not really a nation. This is grave stuff. What we are witnessing, whether we recognize it or not, is the repudiation of a lot of what came out of the aftermath of the Civil War.
And
they don't give up. They just, the conservatives, they just keep on going. Whereas it's kind of like what happened after the end of the Vietnam War. I thought, I was 13, 14, so, but I thought, okay, the war ended. Basically, the military-industrial complex couldn't fight anymore. And I thought, okay, the country will have a clear moment and realize how screwed up it was to get involved in this kind of war. And within years, the country's back doing the same thing. I mean, it's constant war. So it seems like the people don't seem to learn, maybe just one generation kind of learned something, but then the next generation thinks it's special and it's not going to fall for the same thing, but they end up falling for the same thing.
Or the people who learned the lessons and reinforced the lessons die off as a generation. That's, again, that's why I've said before, you don't see the Republicans really, really getting serious about assaulting Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security until the generation whose lives were manifestly improved and changed by it are gone. Okay?
Yeah, then they can rewrite the whole history just like nothing ever happened.
Right. I mean, my grandmother died at the age of 91 in 1985. There was not a politician in this country who could have gotten away with talking about ending Social Security or privatizing it or whatever the way they want to characterize it in her lifetime. And she was one of those people who never missed an election till the day she died. Okay? Because it's worth remembering that when she was born, she was a second-class citizen in this country who did not have the right to vote.
Yeah.
Yep.
She was a school teacher and did not have the right to vote. She was a wage earner and did not have the right to vote.
Bob, can you explain why it is that Native Americans have to have special cards to identify and they have to be certified by the federal government to be considered officially Native American in order to get federal government funds, and that the federal government still looks at blood quantity and tries to do all this weird stuff with, determining whether or not somebody has 4/11, amount of some kind of blood in order to be considered to be,
brother.
It's crazy.
Legally, Larry, I can't explain that legal structure. I honestly don't know. I know that some of the tribal groups maintain, they maintain their own laws about who can be in and who can be out. But I'd kind of like to toss this over to Dr. John for a minute on this idea of blood determinants of ethnicity. Can you take a run at that, John?
Well, a lot of it depends on like you said, the tribal structure. I mean, and the Cherokee with the Dawes rolls they have a very specific set of steps you got to go through to prove tribal affiliation and ancestry and that sort of thing. But it varies from tribe to tribe. And there's a huge number of people we would recognize as native groups that are not federally recognized. So that throws another wrinkle into it. The reason why? Well, it's because there's money involved. There's benefits in voting and affiliation and sovereignty and all that stuff. It's really hugely complicated. I mean, the answer for the Cherokee is different from the answer from the Navajo, for instance. It's not a very satisfying answer.
No, but you're absolutely right when you say that money is involved, because
money and power.
What, yeah. I mean, remember gaming. Yeah, Indian gaming. Remember when part of the whole tableau of crappy conduct between Jack Abramoff and Ralph Reed, if I recall correctly, and I think Tom DeLay was involved somewhere along the way too.
Yes.
Had to do with with Abramoff being hired as a lobbyist to prevent one native group from getting certification for a casino because they were hired because he was the lobbyist for another native group who didn't want to see another casino going into competition with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you can make an argument that the casinos are kind of a 21st century manifestation of the liquor and rifles policy of the federal government in the 19th century.
Well, you mean to tell me they didn't want competition? I thought capitalism was supposed to be about competition.
No.
It was kind of interesting because, you know, from what I understand...
Sergi, hold on a second. Sergi, let me check your temperature there. Capitalism about competition, really?
It's sarcasm, Jason.
You know, this whole thing about blood...
Yeah, I know, and so was my comment.
You know, blood content and who's... I mean, it's absolute insanity. It's ridiculous. And no wonder a group of people would any group of people crazy. No wonder people feel beat
down.
Well,
consider this, Larry. Larry, consider this. Think about what was. Think about how sleazy Scott Brown behaved in his campaign against Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
She pointed out that she has a portion of her ancestry is Native. And all he could do was, look, I'm running against an Indian. it's sickening. I mean, it's racist. And, you know, fortunately, the people of Massachusetts rewarded him for his conduct. I mean, a lot of you live up there. Did that sleazy? I mean, that played into his defeat, didn't it?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I'm in a pretty progressive area. I mean, we tend to notice that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but this is Jim in Louisiana, and I can't believe we have Bobby Jindal, who's not a white man per se, but
who's not named Bobby either, for that matter.
But he's an Indian from India. But this is a pretty racist area. Now, he's not from India. He was born here. Second generation, but he's of Indian descent, Asian Indian.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, it is racist, but there are things that transcend race, and one of the things that primarily transcends race is money. The same thing goes for Nikki Haley over in South Carolina. Now, had she run? Had she had progressive ideas and run as a Democrat, all the money in the world would not have saved her in South Carolina, Stan.
Yeah, speaking power to power will always win for a certain segment. That's for sure. Listen, guys, I gotta drop out. But it was good talking to y'all. Okay,
John, have a great weekend. Thanks for popping in.
Yeah, cheers.
Bye.
Okay. Bye, John.
Bob, I was going to say one thing that also transcends race is political ideology.
Yes.
All right, and I want to get
if he has the same ideology as the conservatives, then he's in, regardless of race.
Right, and remember, this isn't, he is not, he may be of Indian subcontinent ancestry, but he's also allegedly a devout enough Christian that he was running around during his college years committing criminal battery on a woman, apparently, and attempting to exorcise demons out of her.
Well, that's probably very nice.
And coming from that area of Louisiana, that would fit in perfectly.
Oh, God.
I'll tell you something else that transcends race, and that's age. Because when you get down into people under their 30s, you know, I'm 36, but a lot of the younger people, they just aren't seeing race anymore. is.
Nope.
That's a load of crap. With all due respect, Jason, that's a load of crap. With all due respect.
Well,
I am 21 years old, and most of the racism I experience around here are from people in their teens and their 20s.
Well, what's resurging it then, Sergio? Because I don't understand, because there for a while it was just kind of going by the wayside.
Right.
I don't know what's causing it to resurge, but all I know is that
maybe the group of people that you happen to be coming in.
I mean, my generation, at least all of, I can't say all, but the big majority of the people in my generation just have gone past that. But if
I think,
that's fine. I have nothing to do but take him for his word.
No. Well, I think there's a simpler and yet more complex answer, in which you are both probably correct. One, I think geography has a big say-so in it. But I'll also suggest this. You just referenced being 21 years old, right, Sergi?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that means when you became politically aware, culturally aware, what, maybe 14, 15 years old?
I would say 16, 17.
Okay, so... that resurgence that you have seen, then, if we put it within a temporal context, has been entirely and completely within the time span of the current presidency. And as someone who grew up in Alabama, for instance, and who lives in probably the single most racist state of the Union, I can say that I have seen it come out. I thought it was largely done. But you know what? It is back with an ugly vengeance. And it has to do with the guy in the White House.
Yeah, that drives him crazy that a black man, A, has the audacity to run for president, and B, has the audacity to
win. See, Jesse Jackson didn't scare him when he ran for president. Because they knew that there was not a snowball's chance in hell of him ever winning.
I guess maybe when we'll see the end of it is when all the older white people die off, and then you got people of my generation that are the older white people.
I wouldn't even feel comfortable with that, Jason, because. Things happen to people as they age. I'm guessing that not everybody who watches Fox News, for instance, was always as stupid as they are now.
I'll definitely agree with that, because they definitely become stupider as they watch.
There's some sort of a possibly apocryphal quote that is attributed to Churchill having said... if a young person is not a liberal, he has no heart, and if an old person is not a conservative, he has no head.
Right,
yeah. Churchill said that, and also a conservative news commentator who's now passed away, lived a very long life. His name was George Putnam, and he also said that. And he was a rabid anti-communist. And he said at the end of his life that he was always a moderate Democrat, but you would never know it from the way in which he pontificated on Channel 5 or Channel 11 or wherever he worked in the L.A. area.
I think that there's a lot. Sorry.
Yeah, so that's... Go on, Sergi.
I think that there's a lot of factors, probably on the order of hundreds of little bitty factors that all make the resurgence up. Because, you know, when I say racism, I'm not just talking about anti-black racism from white people. Okay, I also get racism from my own race, in that if I had one Oreo cookie for every time I have been called an Oreo, I'd be able to ship them to a third world country and give them all diabetes.
Toaster.
It's
toaster.
Not just
toaster.
It is not just, you know, white on black racism. There's a tremendous amount of black on black racism.
Yeah.
In that if a black person aspires to have a brain, to have a heart, to have a political, especially a progressive political, I'm not sure what the bent activity, whatever the term you want to use. You know, if you aspire to something that is intellectual, that is progressive, that is kind of above the fray, you often get called an Oreo because, you know, black culture's gone down the toilet in the last few decades. I mean, who is representative of black culture nowadays. Gangster rappers, yeah. Violent excess gangster rappers, and, other assorted jackasses, and so, it's all kinds of racism.
Yeah, Sergi has often mentioned
black,
this.
White, too.
Sergi has often mentioned this in chat to us, though. It's very hard for him to, you know, he can speak for himself, but I think what he's, you know, it's obvious that what he's saying is that if you have an intellect, if you are analytical, if you think about things, and if you have a more or less, you know, if you appear to be to fit in, and if you're an intellectual and you're introverted and you think about things and write about things very deeply, you're not accepted. And I don't know if that's exactly what Sergi's trying to say, but that's
there is some of that. I agree with you. There's a lot of that.
What it appears that he is saying.
Yeah, I mean, There's a lot of idiocracy style elements that have creeped their way into black culture. It's like, you know, like I get called an Oreo because I have no desire to drive around a clown car that you have to turn at 2 miles an hour so you don't flip it. You know, I've been called an Oreo because I have no desire to listen to, you know, Jay-Z and Lil Wayne and T.I. and all the area, because I think that they are violent, excess, jerks.
You know,
and it's like, I get called an Oreo. It's like, you know, I...
Wait, there's...
You know,
wait. There are more white people buying those folks than there...
That's right.
Yeah, there are. And I was going to say, Sergi, that's all inside the black culture. I've spent a lot of time in... I got an echo here.
Sure, yeah, I heard that expression used a lot back as far as the mid-60s. So I can't disagree with it. It's used a lot.
Yeah, somebody once said that the people buying a lot of the gangster rap and a lot of that stuff are white middle-class and upper-middle-class kids who want to piss off their parents.
Well, it's not just piss off their parents, but it's just interesting. And I'll speak to that for personal experience, because when I came up in my late teens and early 20s, it was just intriguing to me, and I got into it, and I enjoyed it, and I could relate with it, because at the same time, you're seeing the death of the middle class and the up-and-coming, even white people, that don't really have that much of a damn future either.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that with the music thing, it's just whatever's different. I mean, because I can identify with the Beatles, the Stones, throughout, and then even into punk. But my dad loved the big band, you know. And I think it's almost a generational thing. Whatever your parents like, you're gonna like the opposite. Whatever the newest thing is, as far as music goes.
A lot of truth to that.
Well, sure, and remember, like you could for that era, you could be into the Stones, you could be into the Beatles, but you could also be into Motown, because you know the thing with music is that it crossed a gender divide or a gen, not gender but a
racial
an well, ethnic or racial family. Divide. But I think the bottom line here that I want to get back to and maybe explore a little bit further is the fact that instead of proving the end of racism or its decline, perhaps, what we've seen in the last 5 years is its reemergence, a reminder that it is not only not gone, it is far from gone. My God, there was a plea entered in Alabama today. I'm sorry, Talabama. Of a guy and his mama. And the guy was a former Grand Cyclops of the Klan. And they pled guilty. She pled guilty to lying to the grand jury. And he pled guilty to burning a cross in front of a black neighborhood in Alabama. In 2013.
Oh, as far as what you were talking, I think what you're going for or talking about, as far as this ever fading away, I think very slowly, especially down here in the South. I think you and I have kind of talked about it, Bob, because I don't know. I'm down here in Louisiana, Stan, and it's almost like proud to be stupid thing, you know.
Well, there is a concept now in sociology where it's called color, where people claim to be colorblind, or they claim to say that racism doesn't exist if they don't acknowledge it. As long as they don't acknowledge it cognitively, then that means that they don't look at the social institutions and the economic institutions that have developed out of the ideology that still maintain racism and sexism and what have you. And I saw something on a website, Upworth or something. There's this woman, what is her name? It's Elliot, Jane Elliot, and she's like the foremost diversity trainer in the United States. She goes around to classrooms and also to corporations trying to root out using the blue-eye, brown-eye way of teaching that she first taught to students in 1968. She's from Iowa. But that whole notion of, you know, as long as we don't acknowledge cognitively that such a thing as racism exists or such a thing as sexism exists, then we can wish it out of existence. We don't have to look at the people processes that engendered, you know, that came out historically out of all that stuff.
Well, look, you're never going to extinguish it completely. I look at it this way, though. A majority of the people that voted for this president were white. A majority of the people that voted him into office the first time were white. And that's just the way it is because that's the demographic of the country. Now, the demographic is changing, but you can imagine this back in the days of Martin Luther King, and I would say that we've made great improvements. Now, is it going to go away? No, it's never going to go away. But I see great improvements, and I can actually say that, you know, walking around in a lot of the neighborhoods I walk around in at work, I look a guy in the eye and I give him equal status, and you know, not to just down on anybody, but in the ghettos, but for lack of a better way of describing it, you know, and I look at the guy as an equal. And I think there's a lot more of that going on these days.
You know what? Something else that that Larry mentioned that I think is worth at least considering. I sometimes despair of this diversity training business. I have sat in, just by virtue of, you know, what I do, as an activist against mountaintop removal. I've sat in a lot of trainings. I've sat in diversity trainings. I've sat in anti-oppression trainings. I've sat in anti-racism trainings. And there was a lot of it that was preaching to the choir. because, you know, well, it didn't feel like I was in the room with anybody who really needed to be have it explained to them that racism was unacceptable. You know, there was probably some learning involved because there were breakouts. It was broken down into institutional versus personal, things like that. Okay, sure. But just as is so often the case with any response to this kind of thing, we have this notion that we can pay somebody to come in and they're going to change hearts and minds in a 10-hour seminar. And I just, there's something in me that thinks that there's probably an element of bullshit involved with that.
I would say definitely. I mean, that's one of the other callers was commenting that, and I agree that racism is disappearing, but it'll always be here. And it's going to say, like you said, I don't know if it'll ever be gone.
No, it's not disappearing. I want to reiterate. I said it's declining.
Yeah, it's
not
going to
disappear.
Right, but it'll always be here, and there'll always be people to manipulate it to their advantage. Because one of the big reasons for racism is to have A and B fight while C takes over the position, you know, or has the power, you know.
Yeah, and I think the resurgence that we've seen is just something that was already there anyway. They're just more vocal about it.
Well, they're more vocal about it.
I mean, they were there anyway. They were there the whole time. They've been there ever since the 60s. And their numbers are still declining, but they're just getting more vocal about it. And, you know, I don't mean to minimize my own racism. I'm institutionalized. Ever since I was born, I've heard it, I've been around it, I've seen it, and, you know, I can't help it. I just have to fight with it, you know, within myself.
And see, the thing is, we've got a whole bunch of people here who are kind of in agreement. What do you do with somebody who isn't? Let's say somebody wanted to sit into this group. I mean, would everybody just you know, jump on and everybody just tear this person a new one? Or I mean, do you see the nature of my inquiry?
But isn't the problem institutionalized racism, not just what goes on inside an individual's head?
So that's the big problem. The institutionalized part of it affects people from the top. It affects everybody. And those of us in the middle or at the bottom, all you can do is deal on a much smaller level, but and just, you know, be what you're saying to be. I mean, I walked into places where there was me and another white guy on stage in a bar that was black-owned and black customers. It was kind of nice.
Somebody on the phone line is really making a lot of noise.
Oh.
Yeah, we got some racket coming through, and I'm not.
Hey.
I don't know. Were you throwing chairs around the room, Jim?
No, not lately.
Okay.
Anyway, some of the folks made you feel so welcome, and they were proud to see some people from the majority class had taken an interest and a love of the type of music that they listened to and played. And that was a proud thing, but there's been other instances. Believe me, it's a chronic thing with people, and it's not always the white man who's the villain, but the white man is the villain because he's in the big time because he runs the power structure.
Well, let's go back to this notion of institutional versus personal. Institutional is a lot harder to get away with these days because you have to couch it in allegedly race-neutral terms so that you wind up with the voter suppression laws that we've got in this country now in many of the states. You know, and it's all predicated on, well, you know, also it's just about ID.
Well, that's just
and that's got to be called out for what it is.
Sure, it is, and a lot of people are doing that, Waggy. But on the other hand, let's not sell short the impact of personal because personal drives institutional. Personal beliefs drive policy making. Okay, you know, think of and just to sort of take it a bubble off plumb. Think about Nixon half out of his mind on pharmaceutical medicine, sitting in the Oval Office saying, "Oh, it's the Jews in Hollywood, Billy. Reverend Graham, Christianity doesn't have a chance against the Jews." Because he did. He said these things. Okay?
Even look at our situation now, what's going on with the Koch brothers. I mean, they're using, it's subtle, but racial divide and just divide and conquer.
Yeah, and what I'm getting at with this personal stuff, and here's the question: What do you do when you are confronted with that stuff directly? And I'm not talking about I'm talking about I experience this stuff on a routine basis. I've mentioned before, there's a convenience store not far from me. If I walk in there at 10 o'clock at night, there's going to be a little gang of cranky old white people standing there, and it is seldom that I walk in there that I do not, while I'm in there, I don't go there anymore, as a matter of fact, because to be in there for 45 seconds to a minute and a half or 2 minutes, you will hear that word, and you will hear some sort of Obama joke, you know, to the point that I turned around one evening and I said, "Really, guys?
Yeah, this is disgusting. That's because it's institutionalized. It's part of the culture of that particular convenience store. And that's the part that can't be tolerated. That's the part that's got to be cut down, like the whole idea of political correctness, which, as far as I can tell, was just invented so that people could continue to spew racist crap.
Yeah, I don't think that'll ever change. In fact, I've kind of noticed that in my pathetic excuse for a job situation, but I've noticed that there's some people, they just got that, just mention Obama, and they just blame everything on Obama.
Right, but that's the thing. You can't control what goes on inside people's heads, but you can control what they say in a place.
Yeah, sometimes I wish Barack Obama would come out and make a speech in favor of breathing oxygen, because the right wing would then suffocate themselves.
Hey, Bob, what about? I heard he was doing an interview today that he was saying the next president is going to be a woman.
He said we will have a woman for president very soon. I think was the phrase.
I hope it's Elizabeth Warren in 16.
Yeah. I don't think it will be, and I'm not particularly. I like her where she is.
I'd
like her on top.
Hillary?
I'd like to see her on the Supreme Court because she's so liberal. She's not perfect, but she's liberal enough that she would be a perfect sounding board for liberal causes, even if she's only one of four.
I had a note in. Had a note in from Jan. Jan and Jerry out in Vegas. And by the way, thanks to them and thanks to Linda. We have actually reached the fundraising goal for this evening and for the month of November, so hallelujah, thank you both. But Jan and Jerry point out, since we elected President Obama, things have gotten steadily worse. This is just a white person's opinion, but it appears that racism is exploding. My opinion is it is very, very sad, like the war on women. It has gotten worse. And in a way, I think Jan gets right to the core of it, and that is that it has... It's gotten worse because for some reason or another there was some deep seated need to prove that it had not gone away, and for anybody who thinks,
I don't think it's worse for the majority of people. I think it's just coming out. I mean, you know, people that never would have freaking said anything, or they're out there saying stuff. As far as the percentage of people, it's no worse. It's no worse. It's just showing its head. It's not worse.
Well, there's so many.
It's just that now you can see them, and I actually think that you may actually see things going the other direction.
Well, wait until we will save a discussion of her politics for another day, but wait until Hillary Clinton announces her candidacy. You're going to see misogyny go through the roof.
I'm not going to vote.
Well, like I said, we're going to say we'll save a discussion of her politics for another day, but you will see misogyny go through the roof.
Oh yeah,
Well, look how they try.
Can I share some news I got in the mail today?
Yes, please.
Okay, you know what covered California is?
Yeah, it's your version of Medicaid.
Yes, but the insurance exchange.
Right, right.
Dear Duncan, thank you for applying for health insurance through Covered California for you and your household members. We use the information you gave us in the state and federal data to make this decision. Congratulations, you qualify for health insurance through Covered California for 90 days. You also qualify for up to $332 per month in premium assistance to help you pay for your health insurance coverage. You do not qualify for the enhanced silver plan because your income is 250% above the federal poverty level, which is higher than the enhanced silver plan limits. So what I've got to do now, since I've just started getting all my pension money, is I have to supply them with a bank statement to prove that I'm getting the income that I'm getting, because it just started. And my Social Security this month.
Will that change that? Will that change it upward or downward?
Well, that will allow me to go. No, I already reported the income, but they can't verify that I have that income.
Are you not good for Medicare yet, Dunk?
No, I'm 62.
Oh, you're 3 years off. Okay.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
I was going through a program here in Vermont, but Duncan can hear this too. It was called Catamount. It was a similar program which gives certain people edges up in the system where if you made a little bit, they give you a help towards it, kind of a copay. I'm middle class, quite a lower end of the low tier, but I was in this program and I was paying, up until this year it keeps going up. I started out at like 60, then went to 100, and my last term I've been paying was $150 a month for insurance. It doesn't sound like a lot, but my income, that's a lot stretching other bills. When I went to sign up for our new state care, it went up to $509 a month with no premium assistance, and I didn't qualify for it anymore.
And so...
Oh, well, just as that, I mean, it went from $150 with premium assistance, made it $150 to you're paying $509 a month on your own with no help. So basically, I couldn't afford it on my own. Luckily, my employer picked it up, but still, I'm saying that there's something skewed about the system. A little bit.
And do you, I'm just curious, do you have your own exchange, or?
Vermont had its own healthcare exchange. We took on the expanded Medicaid. I put in all my information like I did before, and my premium ballooned way up to much more of a monthly payment than it was before. It's actually a car payment at this point if I wanted to go on it on my own. Which still is low to people, but for me, that's triple what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. Was your insurance one of those junk-ass plans?
No, it's to the state. It was a decent Medicare program. The only thing it didn't have was dental on it, which my mom was picking up because it's her profession, so she felt it necessary, and so do I, so thank God to her, but... No, it wasn't a crap plan. I didn't have high deductibles. 2 years ago, I had a surgery done that it covered $13,000 in surgery, so it wasn't a bad plan.
Well, you have a state exchange, don't you?
This is a state exchange I'm talking about. The new one that just opened up.
Oh, so you went through all, jumped through all the hoops and applied online and all that?
Well, I'm going to notice back in October saying, hey, you've got this plan... The new state change is coming online because of Obamacare. You need to sign up because this coverage has ended. So I went through all the hoops, tried to sign up by myself, and like I said, it went from $150 a month to $509 a month for the same plan. You know,
something doesn't sound right about that.
Mom, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, Jeremy, one thing I'd suggest is to call the... 1-800 number that they give out for the ACA, because
people have reported a lot of success with that number as opposed to the website, and you actually have a live person on the phone that you can get answers from, because Jason's right. There's something that doesn't sound right about that. It may be right, but I certainly would investigate it till I know for sure that it's 100% right.
Did you get kicked off of the plan that you already had?
I was essentially being, or they were calling it kicked off. They were like to say it was ending for everyone that was on this plan. And the plan I was signing up for wasn't a gold plan, it was a bronze plan. So it was low tier with a high, high payment.
Yeah, but you were on, like, what, Medicaid or what, before?
No, I was on state-sponsored insurance, so it was covered by Medicaid, but it was also covered by the state. It's kind of like a 50-50. They both covered some of it.
Well, you're gonna have to look into that more, because that's not right. I don't think that you're gonna end up having to pay that.
And I wonder
you may wanna call that 1-800 number and check.
And I wonder if that's health insurance.
My situation is different. I haven't had insurance because I wasn't working in the trade anymore.
And you know, I'll tell you right now, for myself, if I went through Florida and they didn't even set up the damn Medicaid expansion or any of the damn sites or nothing, but if even with my income, I could get a platinum plan for myself for $300 a month, so something you're saying ain't right.
No, I wouldn't say something he's saying is not right. I would say it needs to be investigated. Because actually, that might be an advantage to you not having the state-sponsored plan and going through the ACA without the state coverage through Florida. And I'm thinking maybe that might be part of Jeremy's problem, is that state-sponsored plan.
It was a state sponsored plan. When I went and looked at it, it said this would be the price with a premium deduction on it, or this is the price without. You don't qualify for that, so this is your price. I mean, I didn't qualify for the premium assistance because my income was too high at $30,000 a year.
Well, you can go through the general just looking into it, and without putting any information in where you live or anything, and you can get a platinum plan just for yourself for less than $300 a month. So something you're looking at isn't quite right.
My employer was in the same program, and he's paying $602 a month for me in Vermont.
Just out of curiosity, Jeremy, I take it your percent of the poverty level is based on a single person, whereas Duncan's is based on his family members. What is the poverty level?
Yeah, but my wife's on Medicare, so it doesn't.
Well, does anybody know the answer to that, what the poverty level is for a family of four versus a single person? What the actual poverty level is, and then to say you're 250% above it?
Well, the cutoff, at least for Medicaid, or whatever it's called in the various states, is right. It's 137% of the poverty level for the Medicaid expansion.
Go
ahead. And, well, I'm trying. I'm just searching real quick on the. Okay, adjusted for inflation via the consumer price index. Poverty level for 2012 was set at $23,050 total yearly income for a family of four. Okay.
So 250% of the poverty level for a family of four would be something like $46,000-$50,000, right?
Right.
Wow.
And 137% of that would be somewhere in the mid to low 30s.
Right.
Thomas here.
Family of four at 200% is 47.1. Family of three, 39.060. Family of two, 31.020. And family of one, 22.980.
So what's poverty level for a family of one? Because I never hear that. I hear the 200% of...
family of one. Family of one. 100... Anybody hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead, Thomas.
Go ahead, Thomas.
11,490, 133%. I got 15,282, 150%. 17,235, 222,980. Sorry for the lag.
No, no worries. Yeah, it's brutally low for one person.
Well, let me ask this question about the Affordable Care Act and all that. I mean, I'm in Louisiana, Stan, and am I still eligible for it in Louisiana, Stan? Plus, or do I? I'm trying.
No. See, you're out of luck, Jim, because Piyush Jindal has decided that communism will break out all over the bayous if they accept that government money to expand Medicaid. You know, you'll just sit there in your government dependency hammock and let the benefits roll in.
That's thought.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the really brutal aspect of this the decisions by people like Jindal and Rick Perry in Texas, who has more uninsured human beings in his state than any other state in the union and some states combined. Is that while the Affordable Care Act can compel people to participate in the glories of the free market vis-a-vis for-profit health care, if you are at a level where you would otherwise qualify for the Medicaid expansion, well, you just don't get nothing because they didn't accept it. That was the evil genius behind what John Roberts did a year ago last July. The real elephant's camel's nose under the tent, if you will, for the whole Affordable Care Act was in fact the expansion of Medicaid. It was the step forward toward universal single payer health care. And John Roberts, being the most evilly intelligent Republican in the world, knew that.
So that's why
the individual mandate was held up as a function of the taxing power of the government, but the Medicaid mandate was struck down. Because you can't have people getting health care and finding out how wonderful something like universal single payer could be. You see, down the road, if we ever get another sane Congress, they could say 137% looks a little low. Let's bump it to 175. Let's bump it to 2. Let's bump it to 3. And the next thing you know, you got universal single-payer health care. Boom.
Man, it just does that. What is it about getting older? Things just get more grim. I don't know. Like a grim fairy tale.
Well, they don't everywhere.
They get
grim. I mean, that's why I keep talking at such length about understanding America as a plessyized nation. You know, when people engage in these little fantasies of what, you know, of what it would look like if the United States broke up, okay, you know, you'd have the Southeast, and then you'd have the Pacific Coast, and you'd have the Up East, and maybe they'd be aligned with the Midwest, blah blah blah. There's a lot of maps out there, but the real picture of a broken future for the United States of America is one in which the United States of America remains titularly the United States of America. But people are cursed by the accident of the geography of their birth to live radically different lives based upon where they were born. That's what I was talking about. Or that's what I was talking about earlier when Kevin was talking about women's reproductive rights and reproductive choice.
Well, I mean, that's happening right now. Yeah,
it is happening right now. It has already happened, and it is getting worse.
Exactly.
You know, there's going to come a time it's already here. When being born in Texas or Louisiana or Alabama is a death sentence.
No, I'm not.
As compared to somebody born in California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Massachusetts, Illinois, etc.
Yeah, that's why I gotta get out of here somehow, but it's like times of
yeah. Can everybody stand up and wave their arms and say, thank you, Alec, for all of this?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's the thing that blows me away, the stupidity of the people who vote against their own economic self-interest time and time.
But they don't necessarily do that, Jim. They don't necessarily do that. They simply define their interests differently than we would like for them to. You know, people run to the polls to vote for somebody that's got family values in Alabama.
And then their state legislature that they vote in decides on what their interests really are.
Yeah.
Boy, is that like the state legislator who got busted with the $3,000 for coke?
Well, yeah, different interests. Hey, guys, I hate to say it, but I got to wrap it up because we are right up against 9 o'clock and Rick Smith's on the way.
Real quick, Bob. If anybody wants to do me a favor, the number to call is 216-226-7575. That's the crap apartment I live in. And on Monday, you can call him in and maybe you can spare a piece of your mind. I'd appreciate it.
Okay, give that number again.
216-226-7575.
Sounds good. Thank you. And I bet you there'll be some calls.
Change the lock on the door, you know?
Yeah.
And believe me, the eviction law is a month and a half away, and I got a place, but give me time to get out of here, you know?
Yeah, right. Right. All right. Thank you, Bill, and thank you, everyone. I do appreciate it all. Friday on the front porch is always fun. Of course, the Skype group will continue, this being Friday and everything, if you want to jump in and participate there. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you to the folks who kindly got us over the November hump and out of the November hole this evening. That was a big, big deal. Thank you to... I want to get this right and make sure nobody gets left out. Thanks to Gordon. Thanks to Jeremy. Thanks to Robert. Thanks to Kate, to Asa, to Laborman, to Thomas, to Jan and Jerry, and to Linda. Thank you all very, very much. It's what literally keeps this going. And, hey, I'll see you in December. Have a great weekend. And, yeah, tomorrow's a big deal. Roll Tide, roll. Have a great weekend.